The headlines this hour. The Russian President Vladimir Putin accuses the West of pushing Ukraine into conflict with Russia, warning against any interference in that country. Syria says it reserves the right to respond to Israeli aggression hours after several Syrian soldiers were killed in Israel's missile strikes near Damascus. And Palestinians hold the funeral of a young man who was fatally shot by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Thanks for joining us. Tensions between Moscow and the West over Ukraine show no signs of abating. The Russian president has now vowed to give a swift response to countries attempting to interfere in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin said Russia had already taken decisions on how to react in such situations. He accused the West of pushing Ukraine into a conflict with Russia. Putin underlined that Western countries wanted to cut Russia into pieces. The Russian president made the comments while addressing lawmakers in St. Petersburg. Russia reports several blasts in the country's south and a fire at an ammunition depot in the city of Belgorod as the war with Ukraine is on its 63rd day. Local Russian officials say the explosions caused no casualties or damage and that the blaze had been extinguished. Ukraine has not directly claimed responsibility, but described the incidents as a payback for Russia's war on its neighbor. Belgorod has been targeted several times by Ukrainian forces since the start of the conflict. Meanwhile, Russia says it has hit an arms depot in southeastern Ukraine with missiles. The Russian Defense Ministry says the depot in Zaporizhzhia was used to store weapons supplied by the U.S. and European countries to Kyiv. Moscow halts gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria after the two countries refused to pay for Russian energy exports in rubles. The move by the energy giant Gazprom has raised further tensions in Europe, which is heavily reliant on Russian gas. In a statement, the company says supplies will not resume until Sofia and Warsaw abide by the new terms. That refers to President Vladimir Putin's announcement last month that unfriendly countries will have to pay for their gas in rubles or would risk losing gas supplies. Meanwhile, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has rejected accusations of using natural gas as a tool of blackmail, saying that Russia remains a reliable supplier of gas and oil. The reaction came after Ukraine blamed Moscow for using its energy to, quote, shatter the unity of its Western allies. Paolo Raffone, the Secretary General of the SIPPI Foundation, says the halt to Russia's gas deliveries will push up prices and negatively affect the economic situation across Europe.
Well, there is no doubt that the suspension of supplies of gas to European countries, for the time being only Poland and Bulgaria, will increase the price of gas in Europe and therefore the inflationary trend. And this will certainly have an immediate effect on the livelihood and the conditions of the economy in the entire Eurozone. And we already see that the Euro is slipping down to the dollar every day. There will be maybe some kind of raise in interest rates by the ECB sometime in June, July, but it will be late and small because they know very well that if they raise it, they will hit the enormous debt that several European nations have. So it is a way to conduct the war through economic means, which is specular to the one that the Europeans have done to Russia through the so-called sanctions.
Russia bars more than 280 British lawmakers from entering the country in a tit-for-tat move and in the latest repercussion of the UK's measures over the Russian operation in Ukraine. The Foreign Ministry says the restriction is in response to a similar measure taken by London last month against 380 Russian MPs. The ministry has also accused the banned British lawmakers from the Commons of, quote, fueling unwarranted Russophobic hysteria. The UK had blacklisted Russian lawmakers for voting to recognize the independence of the two breakaway Ukrainian regions of Luhansk and Donetsk. London then claimed that the recognition gave Russia a pretext to invade Ukraine. Russia has been hit by an unprecedented wave of sanctions by the U.S., the EU, and some of their allies since the launch of its war in late February. Syria has slammed yet another deadly Israeli missile strike on the country, warning that it reserves the right to respond to the aggression. Syria's foreign ministry, in two identical letters, has urged the UN General Assembly and the Security Council to stop Israeli crimes. Damascus has also warned of serious consequences of Israel's continued violation of the agreement on disengagement that was signed in 1974. Wednesday's Israeli raid near Damascus killed four soldiers and injured three others. Israel frequently targets Syria with airstrikes, especially military installations and forces battling foreign-backed terror groups. The Syrian government calls those attacks violation of the country's sovereignty. Palestinian and Syrian artists have participated in an exhibition in Damascus to mark International Goods Day with the aim of stressing the role of art and culture in promoting the Palestinian cause. Our correspondent Muhammad Ali reports from the Syrian capital.
A fine arts exhibition has been held in Damascus marking International Quds Day in collaboration between the Syrian and Palestinian fine arts unions, as well as the Iranian Cultural Center. Participants showcased many paintings that focused on Palestinians' adherence to their rights despite the brutal acts of Israeli occupation forces.
On Quds Day, our work interpreted the fact that Quds is our cause and that it's become an international cause. We're participating to stress the importance of Palestinian identity and that Quds is the capital of Palestine.
We expressed through our paintings the Palestinian struggle, uprisings happening now, and all forms of our people's resistance, whether in the stones, hands, or weapons. The exhibition is a reflection of Palestinians' reality in the eyes of the artists.
Political and cultural figures toured the exhibition, underlining the pivotal role such events play in countering Israeli attempts to erase Palestinian culture.
Resistance can be in armed struggle as well as in culture, media, art, politics, and popular movements. Art has a main role in our battle in unifying the people and embodying the steadfastness of Palestinians.
There is an Israeli attempt to change the shape of Jerusalem al-Quds, not just through Judaizing the population, but by replacing Palestinian culture and giving an impression that the history of Quds is Jewish. This is why it is important to highlight the Palestinian identity, culture, and resistance.
Quds International Day, set by late Imam Khomeini in Ramadan every year, has been a day of unified action by millions of people who wish to express solidarity with Palestine.
Artists use their artwork to visualize Palestinians' struggle and resistance against Israel. It's a message they are sending in their own way on Quds Day, hoping they help attract the attention of the international community to Palestinians' decades-long suffering. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Hundreds of people attend the funeral of a young Palestinian man who was fatally shot by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank on Tuesday. The victim was shot in the head during an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp. Three others were also sustained injuries during the attack. Since last month, Israeli forces have been intensifying their crackdowns across the occupied territories, including the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. Palestinians have also been carrying out retaliatory attacks. Al-Aqsa Mosque has been a flashpoint during the holy month of Ramadan and ahead of International Quds Day. The Israeli escalation has drawn strong condemnations from Muslim countries. A senior representative of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas in Lebanon says the Palestinian cause is a humanitarian one concerning all free nations. In an interview with Press TV, Osama Hamdan also describes the Israeli regime as a threat to humanity.
First of all, let's say that the issue of Palestine, the Palestinian cause, Palestinian question, Al-Quds, is a humanitarian cause and not only a Palestinian Arab Muslim cause. But the most significant message is that this enemy, this occupation force, is not only against the Palestinians alone, but is also against the entire, all of humanity.
Hamdan further highlighted the importance of International Quds Day, introduced by the founder of Iran's Islamic Republic in the fight against the Israeli occupation of Palestine. He says the regime has failed to be recognized as a legitimate entity by free nations, despite its decades of relentless efforts. He called Israel a usurper regime, which is seeking its hegemony across the region. Hamdan also underlined that the recent Israeli attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque were aimed at weakening Palestinians' resistance against the regime.
This enemy does not believe, only believes in the language of force and excessive force and violence. And they believe that they need to be, in order to take control of the certain hegemony and certain land, they need to break the will and the determination of the people. They've tried and attempted different ways and different methods.
Hamdan also noted portraying itself as an invincible entity as part of the regime's tactic to make resistance forces believe that it cannot be defeated. But he said that such tactics are of no avail as the Israeli regime is afraid of resistance groups both in Palestine and in Lebanon. Hamdan also referred to pro-Israeli propaganda by mainstream Western media. He said the world knows well about the plight of Palestinians, no matter some media turning a blind eye to the facts. Meanwhile, the Hamas representative in Lebanon painted a grim picture of the people in the Gaza Strip. He said 60% of the Gazans are below the poverty line, and the situation is exacerbating due to the continued Israeli siege. Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted a summit of solidarity with Palestinians. The event also discussed the ongoing Israeli raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which have drawn worldwide condemnation. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Palestine belongs to Palestinians. This is what activists here at Tehran's Imam Sadegh University say in a summit dubbed Palestine's referendum. While many initiatives have been proposed to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, such as the two-state solution or the so-called deal of the century, the Islamic Republic calls for a referendum that allows Palestinians to decide their fate.
3 decades ago, our leader Ayatollah Khamenei proposed the idea of a referendum with the participation of Palestinian Jews, Christians, and Muslims, and without the interference of Israel, and the resulting political system would determine how Palestine is ruled.
Initiatives that wouldn't lead to the liberation of Palestine are not a solution, but a dead end. 7 decades of occupation have showed that no soft measure has worked, and resistance and referendum are the only ways out of the current situation in Palestine.
Since the start of the holy month of Ramadan, tensions between Palestinians and Israelis have been running high, as Israeli forces have stepped up raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque, assaulting Muslim worshippers inside prayer halls and providing protection to the Israeli settlers, desecrating Islam's third holiest site. Observers warn that the escalating tensions in the occupied old city of Al-Quds could lead to another full-scale conflict between Palestinian resistance forces and Israel.
It is highly likely that this current crisis would lead to a war, as Hamas has warned of consequences if Israel presses ahead with its violence. In May last year, similar actions by Israel led to the 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime, during which Israel killed at least 260 Palestinians, but at the same time it suffered great losses from the resistance.
This event is held ahead of the International Quds Day, a global pro-Palestine rally that takes place every year on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. The occasion seeks to bring the Palestinian cause to light, with the hope to mobilize a global action against Israel's continuous violation of Palestinians' rights.
While the UN has expressed deep concern over the escalating violence against Palestinians, activists here say this is not enough. They called on the international body to stop paying lip service and instead take action to keep Israel from any further breach of security in occupied Palestine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The dust has settled after France's election, and many say the nation is not looking too well. A lackluster election has revealed extreme divisions, which President Emmanuel Macron may only worsen. Rami Mazari has more from Paris.
With the re-election of President Emmanuel Macron, France's mainstream media has stopped worrying about fascism and started to honestly discuss the state of the country. A France divided is the most common headline. In 2017, Macron promised to not give France a reason to vote for the extremes of the political spectrum, but the far right and the far left have both grown to new highs.
It's a good thing Macron was re-elected. We need a young, efficient, pro-European president with a long-term vision. I'm surprised at the high score for the National Front, but in their economic program, they forget that it's the bosses who are in charge of salaries and not the president.
Le Pen won just 5% of the vote in the capital, while out of 101 departments, she carried 30 of them, mostly rural. She secured just one department in 2017. 80% of voters described the presidential campaign as being of poor quality, and few desired a rematch of 2017.
I didn't vote in the second round. In the first round, I voted for third place finisher Jean-Luc Mélenchon and decided to abstain. I think it's better that Macron won instead of Le Pen, who is too extreme right for me.
Macron's problem is that once again, he can't claim his win signifies a broad mandate for his proposals. Subtract 39% of the total electorate due to abstention and purposely spoiled ballots, and Macron's 58% of the vote falls to just 35% of the electorate. If we fairly assume that, like in 2017, 43% of his voters only did so to block Le Pen, then just 20% of the total electorate chose Macron for his policies or personality. That's a drop of 4 points from 2017. If Macron continues to rule as if his policies don't need a broad popular mandate, then France's permanent social unrest seems likely to continue.
A Le Pen victory would have set off immediate protests, but for now, a calm resignation is reigning. However, few expect the Paris street or the rural roundabout to remain quiet for very long. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
That is the world news. Do stay with us.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
International Quds Day, a day of resistance of the Islamic Ummah. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in support of the Palestinian cause, designated the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as International Quds Day. The Imam urged all Muslims of the world to join hands to unite in support of the oppressed Palestinians and in confrontation of the Israeli regime and its backers. On August 7, 1979, when the Islamic Revolution was less than a year old and the Islamic Republic, a fledgling state, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, called upon all Muslims to take part in rallies and marches on the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, displaying their solidarity and support for the lawful rights of Muslim Palestinians. The Imam said World Quds Day rallies will display the unity and cohesion of the Islamic Ummah. Commenting on International Quds Day, the late Imam Khomeini said, World Quds Day isn't just the day of Palestine. It is the day of Islam. It is the day for reviving Islam. It is truly an international day, which doesn't just concern the city of Al-Quds. It is the day when the poor and downtrodden confront the arrogant powers. In fact, Quds Day symbolizes unity and determination of the Islamic Ummah vis-à-vis the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Palestine, Gaza, and other Islamic lands. In fact, the blood of Palestinians has unmasked Zionism and revealed the true face of this usurper regime. On Quds Day, the shouts of Muslims will draw attention to the oppression of Palestinians. Many academics, intellectuals, artists, and cultural figures around the world welcomed the designation of the last Friday of Ramadan as World Quds Day. In Islamic Iran, just as in all other countries, masses of people thronged the streets on World Quds Day, showing their support for the Palestinian struggle, and in marches and rallies called for liberation of occupied Palestine. According to media reports, rallies and marches are held each year in at least 80 countries. The holy city of Al-Quds will remain forever the capital of Palestine and the first Qibla, or direction of prayer, of Muslims. Because the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque is located in the city of Al-Quds, Quds-e-Sharif, this city is of special importance to Muslims. The significance of the city of Al-Quds lies in the fact that the Holy Land of Palestine has historically been the place where many prophets of God have lived. It is the first Qibla, or direction of prayer, of Muslims, and it is the place where Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, ascended to the heavens, a process known as Mi'raj. It is also true to say that the city of Al-Quds has a special significance for Christians and Jews as well. It is for this reason that the city of Al-Quds has a special significance from the point of view of Zionists. Zionist leaders have inextricably intertwined the existence of the fake Zionist regime with the city of Al-Quds. In fact, expansion of illegal Zionist settlements in and around the city of Al-Quds, Judaization of the occupied territories, particularly the area around the city of Beit al-Muqaddas, and changing the demographics of this city is the key to Zionist plans to destroy Palestine and the city of Al-Quds. Judaization of occupied territories is very important to the Zionists, particularly Judaization of Al-Quds. They are spending billions of dollars pursuing this project. From the point of view of Zionists, building houses and settlements on Palestinian lands is essential, and this is being pursued relentlessly. Last year, 2021, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, emphasized that the Palestinian issue is still the most important and pressing issue in the world of Islam. He said the issue of Palestine concerns all Muslims. The leader said the Zionists turned occupied Palestine into a center of terrorism, a terrorist base, right from the inception of this regime. Israel is not a country. It is a terrorist base which is being used against the Palestinian nation and other Muslim nations within this region. Fighting this bloodthirsty regime is the duty of every Muslim and can be viewed as a fight against tyranny, oppression, and terrorism. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader noted that the top martyr, General Qasem Soleimani, the former head of IRGC Quds Force, is the best role model one can choose. The insight and wisdom of this martyr general led to the formation of the Axis of Resistance, and General Soleimani led this axis. He was martyred by the American terrorists. Top General Soleimani was highly committed to the fight against the Zionist enemy. He did everything he could for the Palestinian cause, and he sacrificed his life for this struggle. General Qasem Soleimani contributed immensely to both the Palestinian liberation struggle and to the resistance axis. His contribution was central to the victory of Palestinian resistance in the Gaza Strip and to the victory of Lebanese Hezbollah movement in southern Lebanon. The martyred general made a significant contribution to the defeat of Zionists. It is obvious that the rallies and marches which take place every year on International Quds Day in support of Palestinians and the city of Al-Quds leads to better morale and the strengthening of fighting spirit among Palestinians. The Palestinian residents of the city of Al-Quds are boosted tremendously and inspired hugely by the international support for their cause, which is displayed every year on the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan. Today, we can see the staunch resistance and sacrifices of the Palestinian people in both the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank of the River Jordan. The ceremonies, rallies, and marches on International Quds Day leads inevitably to an expansion of the culture of resistance and intifada among Muslim countries and unveils the fake, bloodthirsty nature of the Zionist regime even more. Muslims should unite to confront this child-killing regime, which is the main common enemy of Muslims. This year, the World Quds Day rallies and marches have taken on an added significance in view of the intensifying crimes and atrocities being committed by the Israeli regime. It is also true to say that the ways of combating the Zionist regime have also changed somewhat. Palestinians used to fight with their bare hands. They used to throw stones at the Israeli occupiers, but today they have access to advanced weaponry such as assortment of missiles. And this has increased their motivation to expel the Zionists from their homeland. This has dismayed the Zionists enormously. The security of the Zionist regime is threatened as popular Palestinian resistance movements and young Palestinians stand staunchly against this regime and have found added motivation to resist. The so-called normalization of ties between the Zionist regime and various Arab regimes has angered the Palestinian population, who have started a new chapter in their long-running struggle against the Zionists.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio,
Now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
What I'd like to discuss tonight regarding the topic of the Day of Quds is that I think there's generally a difference in view, in scope, in regards to how to get rid of the Zionist regime. And I'm speaking of the believers. I'm talking about the mu'minin and mu'minat, the ones who are perhaps even participating in the fight, those who are in the battlefields working against the Zionist regime. There seems to be a difference of view, a difference of understanding of what, how this is going to happen, what is the procedure to do this. And part of that has to do with what's happening. What do I mean? Obviously, the Zionist regime is the one that has brought terrorism to that region. The very existence and establishment of the Zionist regime as a state, as they call it, was through terrorism, literally. The methods that were used were terrorist tactics, terrorism against various Western governments to bend their hands, twist their arms, to force them into accepting the existence of a Zionist entity over there. And also the local people, the Muslimin and Muslimat for the most part, and also the Christians and perhaps the Jews that were already there, they were all terrorized in order to get the Zionist regime there. And from the day they started establishing that, their whole existence has been the existence of a very evil entity that has nothing to do except for war, except for killing, except for torturing, and so on and so forth. That is what we have found over anyone that looks just very briefly. That's all you will find. So in order to combat that behavior of the Zionist regime, there needs to be a defense mechanism that protects the people against these attacks. When Israeli jets go and bomb Lebanon, when they did, when they put their tanks on the ground by the border and they just started going, this is, I'm talking about the early days of the invasion of Lebanon. I'm not talking about the 2006 war. There was an invasion of Lebanon for about 20 years. They had to leave. They were forced out of Lebanon through the work of Hezbollah and the believers there by using the defense mechanism, the arms that they had. They took up arms. They took weapons, they needed weapons to defend themselves. And so they did. They defended themselves. And they forced Israel out of Lebanon. In Gaza, we see a similar pattern. This is where Hamas and Jihad al-Islami are. And they have been defending the Palestinians there. And there was a time where that part was occupied as well. And through the defense tactics of Hamas and Jihad al-Islami, the Zionist regime had to pull out of that region, that area, the Gaza Strip. And ever since, these two organizations have been using arms to defend and protect the Palestinian people. Anytime that the Israelis send jets, send drones, send bombs, send whatever they send towards Gaza, You need to have an armed group, an armed organization of believers that are going to stop the brutality, the vicious behavior of this war machine, this killing machine called the Zionist regime, or Israel as they call it. In the West Bank, as it is called, they go in, they protect a group of settlers. The settlers go into whatever house they want, kick the people out of that house. They take their bulldozers and tear down whatever house they want. Settlers treat the Palestinians like garbage on the streets of their own. That's not even considered by international law Israel. Yet, the armed army and police, as it's called, what it's really the military, is present there to protect the animal behavior, the vicious behavior, the inhuman behavior of Israelis that call themselves settlers. And the defenseless Palestinian has got to deal with this military presence, and there's nothing that it can defend. He or she or that family can defend themselves. They have no choice but to leave it. There has to be a mechanism of defense. There must be armed organization, or the believers need to organize themselves with arms to protect themselves against this vicious behavior. That's definitely supposed to be there. And they need to make advancements, and alhamdulillah, they have, by the grace of God. There were days that the only thing we saw in the Intifada was youngsters throwing stones at the heavily armed Israeli army. Now we see they have various tactics. They have missiles. They have drones. Hezbollah one way, Hamas and Jihad al-Islami in another way. When Israel went into Syria and they occupied the Golan Heights, and they're still occupying them, the warfare and the equipment that the Syrians had compared to what they have today. So all of this was to explain a couple of points. One is to show that it is the Israelis that from day one, before they established what is called Israel, they were the ones that brought vicious behavior. They brought weaponry. They killed. They killed not only from the locals and the Arabs. They've killed the British that allowed them to be there. They've killed the Americans that have supported them right there and elsewhere. That's just how they are. Okay. In order, that was point number one. And that was a prelude or preface to this, to show it's a premise to this, to the logic of there needing to be an organized movement or organized movements. Believers need to organize themselves with arms to protect themselves, protect their lives, protect their families, protect the believers, protect the people, and protect the lands in Palestine. That's definitely a need. And there's a lot of conversation and a lot of talk regarding this. On one hand, the Israelis hate that. They hated when the Islamic Republic was established, and now you have something independent, because prior to that, the Zionists were, along with the Americans, were reaping the benefits of the Iranian lands and resources and so on and so forth in so many different ways. After that, when the Islamic Republic went over there to train and supply the Muslim youth in Lebanon, Hezbollah, very angry at that. And anytime there is any type of advancement that Hezbollah makes, they're very much angry at that. They don't want Hezbollah. They've put Lebanon through a heck of a time. They're pressuring the Lebanese people through sanctions. There's so many different ways for them to give up on Hezbollah. The same way that all these sanctions against Iran, because they've realized this what they call regime, or this government set up in the Islamic Republic, similar to Hezbollah, is grassroots. It's supported by the people. It's not like Saddam's government in Iraq that the people hated it. People genuinely hated Saddam's government across the various sectarian lines that they draw for us. Shia, Sunni, Arab, Kurd, everybody hated Saddam. There were very, very few that were paid one way or another. They were of the oppressive system of Saddam that could have liked it. Otherwise, no one liked it. They've realized that it's not a type of government like that, or even like some other, because in Saddam's case, they really hated him. But other governments, people may not hate them. However, they're not supported by their people. If a government is not supported by their people, then it's very easy to get the people to go against the government and finish them up.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Ali Munhali Hakim Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صابر مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. More than 5 dozen advocacy groups have pressured Congress to cut off U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war and blockade on Yemen, highlighting that it has helped cause the deaths of nearly 500,000 people and pushed millions more to the edge of starvation. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Coalition Demands End to U.S. Military Support for Saudi-led War on Yemen. Here's the story. More than 5 dozen advocacy groups have recently pressured Congress to cut off U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war and blockade on Yemen, highlighting that it has helped cause the death of nearly 500,000 people and pushed millions more to the edge of starvation. The group's letter to Congress, led by Churches for Middle East Peace, Demand Progress, Friends Committee on National Legislation, FCNL, Move On, Queen's Institute for Responsible Statecraft, and Yemen Relief and Reconstruction Foundation, comes in the midst of a 2-month truce. The signatories are calling on lawmakers to co-sponsor a forthcoming war powers resolution from Representatives Pramila Jayapal and Peter DeFazio, declaring that Congress must reassert its Article 1 war powers, terminate U.S. involvement in Saudi Arabia's war and blockade, and do everything it can to support the Yemen truce. Hassan Attayeb, Legislative Director for Middle East Policy at FCNL, said in a statement recently that the recently announced nationwide truce between Yemen's warring parties offers hope that an end to the 7-year conflict might finally be possible. Congress must help prevent backsliding by Saudi Arabia, which has driven so much of the violence through indiscriminate airstrikes and crippling blockade, by passing the Yemen War Powers Resolution and blocking U.S. military support for any renewed hostilities, he added. Congressional pressure is critical right now to keep the warring parties at the bargaining table and off the battlefield. A coalition led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates began waging war on Yemen when then-U.S. President Barack Obama was in office, and continued to do so throughout the former President Donald Trump's tenure. When President Joe Biden took office, he committed to ending U.S. support for the Saudi-UAE-led coalition's brutal war on Yemen, noted Demand Progress foreign policy campaigner Kavan Kazagurian. Unfortunately, the U.S. continues to provide critical support for the coalition's war effort and blockade, which has led to one of the world's worst humanitarian crises, he added. As the letter lays out, in February 2021, Biden announced an end to U.S. participation in the Saudi-led coalition's offensive operations in Yemen. Yet the United States continues to provide spare parts, maintenance, and logistical support for Saudi warplanes. The administration also never defined what offensive and defensive support constituted, and it has since approved over $1 billion in arms sales, including new attack helicopters and air-to-air missiles. This support sends a message of impunity to the Saudi-led coalition for its bombardment and siege of Yemen. With continued U.S. military support, Saudi Arabia escalated its campaign of collective punishment on the people of Yemen in recent months, making the start of 2022 one of the deadliest time periods of the war, the letter points out, adding, earlier this year, Saudi airstrikes targeting a migrant detention facility and vital communications infrastructure killed at least 90 civilians, wounded over 200, and triggered a nationwide internet blackout. Representatives for groups that signed on to the letter expressed disappointment with the current administration. Although President Biden initially seemed to signal that he would end U.S. support for the Saudi-led war on Yemen, it has become clear that his administration is not committed to constraining Saudi aggression, said Anil Shaleen, a research fellow at the Queen's Institute for Responsible Statecraft, adding, if it were, we should have observed Saudi airstrikes on Yemen decline under Biden, and instead they have risen. U.S. support for the Saudi war continues despite a growing recognition that the U.S.-Saudi relationship is deeply dysfunctional and fails to serve U.S. interests, she added. For this reason, it is imperative that Congress pass a war powers resolution to remind the executive branch of Congress constitutional authority and role as a voice for the American people. Sarah Lee Whitson, Executive Director of Democracy for the Arab World Now, DON, also emphasized the responsibility of Congress, noting that from Obama to Trump to Biden, successive administrations have skirted our Constitution to pursue the war in Yemen without seeking congressional approval. This ill-considered venture has led not only to devastating consequences for Yemen's people, but endangered our military forces and our nation, making us legitimate targets for counterattack, she said. It's time to put an end to short-sighted, reckless miscalculations on the decision to go to war. We need to reaffirm this decision must always rest in the hands of People's Congress by passing the Yemen War Powers Resolution.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. You and I must feel the presence of God when taking or abandoning an action. If this happens, then divine blessings will come pouring. This is the same thing that was mentioned in Surah Al-Hud. In the chapter, we read that heavenly blessings will be showered on us. Heavenly blessings are not limited to rain. They include everything, including divine mercy. Shower your blessings on us. This attentiveness of us will be beneficial to the people. The Islamic Republic, the country and to ourselves, because it gets our hearts closer to spirituality and the pure life offered by God. Well, these were the words of advice that I wanted to discuss. Of course, as I said before, I myself need them more than all of you. I hope that God will help us be influenced by these words of advice.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
As for the recommendations, I have a number of recommendations for you, dear brothers and sisters, who have entered the arena of governmental responsibility, including in the Majlis, the Parliament, in the administration, and in various other organizations, as a fresh group of people have entered the field. In particular, I have recommendations for young officials. Fortunately, a large number of youths have found their way in the body of the government. This is very gladdening if they take care of themselves. The recommendation that I wish to offer today is attention to detriments. One is arrogance and another is passivity. These are two detriments that you must meticulously be aware of. Arrogance is Satan's weapon. Arrogance and hubris is Satan's weapon, and it has different sources. It does not matter where it originates from. Sometimes it originates from your position. Imagine that previously you used to work in a remote area. Now you have undertaken a higher managerial position. For example, in the Majlis, in the Parliament, in the administration, and in revolutionary organizations or in the armed forces. This might make one arrogant due to the position that one has achieved. This is one origin of arrogance.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.